Hearing on House Bill 3421 and invite Representative McLean forward. Representative, did you also want to have your constituents up at this time? Or?
We could, if you'd like to.
I know they've traveled, and I don't know if they're trying to be on their way home tonight.
Are you guys heading home right after this?
Yeah, if possible.
All right, well then, go ahead and come on up.
Go right ahead when you're ready.
Hi, my name is Mike McLean, and I represent District 55 in the legislature, which includes a significant portion of Jackson County. The Careys who are sitting to my right are constituents, and I became aware of the challenge that they had with having on their property a pond that was not put in pursuant to a permit. And so the Careys had a went through a process to create the legal basis for them to be able to maintain the pond, and they live in rural Jackson County. You'll hear from him in a second. The bottom line is that they were not rewarded for doing the right thing, meaning that we have a situation in Oregon where we have older ponds that when the owner seeks to get them recognized under Oregon law or to remedy repairs or any of that sort of thing, they have to hide to do it or they get penalized, meaning take out the pond, et cetera, et cetera. This catch-22 has led to sort of a disincentive. And the long short of it is we have an opportunity to work on a bill this session that would create an opportunity for those who have these older ponds to go through a process where they could be registered and where in critical water areas or places where there are demands that would supersede it, that they would be able to release the water. And I don't want to go through all the details, but just to tell you, it is a real issue. It impacts the state, and we have folks who are impacted on it directly who tried to do the right thing. So without boring you any further, I would ask that you adopt the Dash 1 amendments, which came pursuant to working with the ODFW and the Water Resources Department, along with the attorney for the Careys and some other interested parties. And the Dash 1 appears to be the consensus on what works. Now, that being the case, Representative Marsh just told me that the Medford Water Commission may have a couple of additions, and my understanding is they were good with the Dash 1, but maybe they have adjustments, but I don't understand it would that they don't oppose the Dash 1 amendments, but perhaps they have an amendment or two. In Farm Bureau, I was just told, may have a word or two tweak. So there was no better place than the Rules Committee under the leadership of Jennifer Williamson to make those tweaks. So my request is you adopt the Dash 1 amendments, move it to Rules, where hopefully you, Mr. Chair, will dive in with both hands and make sure that the water politics actually can be calmed and we can have some resolution on at least one water issue this year that is consensus. So with that, I want to introduce the Careys from Jackson County.
Would, if you wouldn't mind, are you able to stay a few more minutes in case the committee has questions of the amendment?
Or certainly. Okay. Yes, I will, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead.
Hi, I'm Sabrina Careys, my husband John Carey. In 2010, John and I rented the property on Butte Falls Highway. After renting for about 4 years, we bought the property in 2014. In February of 2016, I called the water master to inquire about the extent of our water rights, only to be informed that we had no water rights, our pond was illegal, and had to be removed at our expense. All of this came as quite a shock to us. As renters, we understood the pond was ours to use for any purpose and to any extent that we chose. When the time came to buy, I researched the county records. The assessor's page states Lake On property on the front page, at the historical files littered with references to the large pond. How could it be that such property records would not lead to the discovery that the pond was illegal? But that was the case, and unwittingly, we moved forward with the purchase. I contacted the local watermaster in 2016, asking about our water rights. It broke my heart. We invited the watermaster to our property to see the pond for himself. We informed that it was unregistered and therefore illegal. It must be drained, and we are to cover the entire expense. It was our understanding that removal of the pond will likely cost us at least $25,000, and the effect on the value of our property of the pond if removed is likely to be very detrimental. The pond is the most enchanting feature of the property. The wildlife that comes, it's extensive. They've been relying on this pond for four decades. I'm sorry. It was built in the 1970s. It's been on the property the whole time, never changed in 40 years, according to the neighbors and other people in the area. In the 90s, property owners were given the opportunity to register ponds, but the then owners were living out of state, and they didn't even know this opportunity was available. And the property and the pond were left as is, where is, for the next 20-some-odd years until we are to today without a change of ownership. And the pond went undetected by the water master or anyone else until my phone call. And they say it's a complaint-driven system, but nobody complained. I just asked, what are my water rights? And now they want to take away my pond. Since then, we've worked diligently to comply with state law. We live in the Big Butte watershed, so there are no irrigation rights available. There's no new water appropriations where I live. But this pond has been there for 40 years. Nobody said a word. Nobody upstream. There is no stream. There's just any. I'm sorry. The main benefit for the community in allowing the registration of historic use ponds is to also serve as a valuable resource during fire season. We received letters of support from the local fire district 3, as well as the Oregon Department of Forestry, requesting that our pond remain as a water resource, as it's large enough and easily accessible for helicopters to refill their dip buckets multiple times. Tanker trucks can drive right up and fill up with water. Fire agencies have limited access to water in rural areas such as the Big Butte watershed, and our pond could serve multiple agencies at one time. All in all, almost everyone I've talked to along the way, from state agencies to local politicians to citizens, believe that historic use ponds are a valuable community resource and that property owners should be able to register them and maintain them so a database of accessible water is established. Without the passage of this bill, the continued existence of unregistered ponds will serve no purpose for the community. And the current ideology of let sleeping dogs lie is not helping anyone. Ignoring a problem is never the solution. House Bill 3421-1 allows the existence of historic use ponds in areas where the appropriation of new water rights is next to impossible and affords property owners a solution to a problem that exists for hundreds, if not thousands, in a similar situation. Yeah, just thank you. Thank you for letting me speak. Thank you, Senator McKay.
Jonathan, did you want to have it?
John, did you want to?
No, not really. The main thing is we didn't buy our property for the double-wide mobile that was put on there in 1995. We bought it for the nature, the beauty, and the lake that was there. And elk come and nest two times a year on the other side of my lake. I mean, it's something that is in tune with all the animals in our forest. If that is removed, there is no large water source like that for another 20-30 miles. So they're going to have to change their migration patterns. They're going to change everything. I mean, it'll change our forest. It'll change. Hunters won't be able to hunt where they were hunting before because the water where those animals were getting before aren't going to be there anymore. So all I mean, it makes no sense to me to take something that's doing no harm and creating so much benefit just because a piece of paper says that this is what the law is and it needs to be this way. There needs to be some room for creating what is remedy. Legal and what is proper or what is right for the times or what is right for the situation. You know, it seems the only argument we ever had through this whole thing is that we want it removed because it says you have to have it removed. They never said we want it removed because we need the water somewhere downstream, because if they let it downstream, it would go down into the Rogue River and out into the ocean, not being producing any power anywhere, not producing any irrigation anywhere, not producing anything. There's the water so minuscule that it wouldn't add enough water to the water table to help fish migrate. There is no benefit to removing it. There is so much benefit to keeping it. And it's not just for my sake, it's not just for my wife's sake, it's for the entire area's sake. It makes no sense for my neighbors to not have possible fire suppression water around when it was there for 40 years, and now all of a sudden, because a piece of paper somewhere says it should be removed, it gets removed. You know, what happens if a forest fire starts in my forest right after they drain it? Can I come back and sue somebody? Because the water that would have put out the fire around my property would have saved my property, but now that water's gone. And now it can't. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, one lawsuit at a time.
Yes. Representative, yeah. If I could get Jonathan to state his full name for the record before we move on.
I'm Jonathan Paul Carey.
Yeah, thank you.
So I'd sum it up, Chair and members of the committee, that there are significant community benefits for having these ponds registered, and subject to regulation, such as releasing the water when subordinating to senior water rights, et cetera. So we're not asking for an old pond like this. And this bill would not apply to new ponds. If you built a pond after 2000, the year 2000, then you should have known better. These are the older ponds. So it would allow a process to create them, get them registered, legal, and they would only become legal if they complied with law regarding being able to release, all that stuff. And then we have the community benefits of having a wildlife habitat, water for firefighting, et cetera. I think Sabrina said it best, that it's not... it's not a good solution to just ignore this, and that's what we've done for a long time in Oregon. The only people who show up on the radar and are asked to have their ponds removed are the people who actually walk through the front door and try to do the right thing. With that, we can answer any questions.
Committee, are there questions? I also intend to go to a work session immediately after this on this bill, so if you have more discussion-related items, I'd hold them to there. But Representative Brocksmith and then Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. No questions. Ma'am, I appreciate you and your husband coming up and testifying for this. I know it's not the easiest thing to do, and you did a fantastic job, so thank you.
Yeah.
You mentioned in your testimony that there was a time, I think you said 1990, where Water Resources allowed these ponds to be registered. Is that
the Water Master had told me that sometime 95. In the 90s, I think it was 95, okay. That they published in the newspaper a similar concept for people to register their ponds.
And you also mentioned in your testimony that the assessor's docs, of course, state that this pond has been on this property. Do they state that the pond has been on the property prior to the 1990s when the Water Resources Department...
Yes, the historical file does show in sketches that it was there.
I'm sorry, because this is a situation where the state, in my opinion, has failed you, because you have a county which is a political subdivision of the state, that clearly shows on their records that this pond exists. It's part of the assessed value of the property. And yet you have another agency that works with, as a former commissioner, works with the counties, and they don't have it in their paperwork. And so I apologize for that, and that you have to go through all of this. Because the benefits of your pond on there, as has been stated by all of you, are as such, and they don't need to be repeated, even though as they should. This is obviously a paperwork problem that I've found time and time again since I've been sitting in this chair, and so thank you again.
Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to second those comments about your coming over to the Capitol to testify about this bill. I know it can't be an easy thing to do. I missed it, or you didn't say it. I'm not sure which. What is the source of the water that flows into the pond?
It's in dispute.
Well, what are the possibilities?
The possibilities are rain runoff.
Yes.
What I know it to be is there's an irrigation ditch that runs above the property on the hillside that just constantly channels water all year round. It's irrigation during the summer, and they run power through it during the winter. But it's always there, and it just leaks into the ground, leaks out. Of springs out of the side of my hill, and just
the irrigation district in question says it's not their water.
Yes, they don't want to be littering water on my property, so it doesn't belong to them.
The water master said that's likely because it just comes out of springs from the side of the hill.
It's all spring. Water runs right out of the side. I mean, it's technically not my property, but the property that I used to rent half of before I only bought my 10 acres, the other 20 acres, it's partially unusable because of how much water actually runs out of the hill, or it's just strings and springs and wetland-ish area.
Could I follow up?
Quick follow-up.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So if the pond wasn't there, where would the water go?
It would run off down through other people's property,
eventually connect to McNeil Creek, which feeds
the Rogue River, which then feeds the ocean, and there's no catching in between.
Right, and this, if I could, Mr. Chair, this land is mostly volcanic in
yes,
nature.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Very good. We really appreciate you traveling over here today, and I'll echo the other comments of my committee members. And these are the types of unintended consequences that we really need to dig into here at the legislature, and I'm happy to work on this.
Thank you.
We thank you very much for considering all this and whatnot. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative McLean. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3421. And open a work session on House Bill 3421. I would entertain a motion on this bill.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated April 12th, 2017.
Representative Power moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated 4/12/2017. Is there any discussion? Committee, Representative McLean has worked very hard on this bill, and the amendments are relatively recent. I've had a chance to look at them and talk with Representative McLean about them. It's of my opinion that this might be the type of issue that we can work on if the bill goes to rules. And I've promised Representative McLean that I'll dig into that a little bit and see what we can do. This may be an issue that needs to go to an interim work group, but it also could be an issue that we could get done later on in the session. So if that helps you make your decision easier, then so be it. But is there any other discussion on the amendment? Representative?
I have a comment on the bill itself.
Okay. If there's no objection on the amendment, I'm going to go ahead and pass it. Okay. The amendment is adopted.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 3421 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Power moves House Bill 3421 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Helm.
do want to make just a couple of comments on behalf of the Medford Water Commission. There may be some dispute as to who holds the water rights for the water that flows into this pond, but the Water Commission believes it's part of that conversation. They are supportive of this effort. They've made comments that this is good legislation and a good attempt to address a significant issue for the homeowners. But they have put forward some language that they would like considered in the bill, and so we'll simply make sure that that language gets forwarded to rules to so that it can be considered in that context.
Very good. Thank you. Any further comment?
Representative Marsh stole my comment. I agree, and I'm very happy to have the bill worked further in rules.
Okay. Very good. I would just add that there's additional comment I understand that has been put into the record regarding the scope of the bill and how it might impact other similar situations and wanting to make sure that it works across the board if it's possible to remedy this situation under current law. And I'll be paying attention to that as well. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm happy to support this bill going to rules. I hesitate just a little bit in doing it with a due pass recommendation on the amendment we're currently adopting, but we'll definitely give it a courtesy there and hope that we can work out the details in that committee.
No further discussion. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Benz?
Aye.
Representative
Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative
Rushkey? Aye.
Representative Austin?
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. So, committee, I have a couple of announcements on our agenda today. The first is that for various reasons we won't be having the work session on House Bill 3349. And then I'm going to make a couple of comments on House Bill 2710. And then we'll go on, I think, with the rest of the agenda as best we can. So at this time, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2710. Okay. So, committee, this we remember this bill is the bill that I brought forward on causing an update and an accelerated schedule on. The energy efficiency building codes for both residential and commercial buildings. And a very good amount of work has been going on both here in the legislative branch and in the executive branch by the governor's office. The governor's developed a potential executive order that tackles a number of energy efficiency issues across state government and including an update of the building codes. I've been working closely with the governor's office to make sure that they understand the intention of House Bill 2710 to set an aggressive objective for energy efficiency for commercial and residential buildings into the near and midterm future. At this time, however, I'm confident that conversation and negotiation can go on through the governor's office and that this legislation is no longer needed. But with that said, it is my hope that the governor will choose to adopt an aggressive posture toward getting our commercial and residential buildings into a mode where they are highly energy efficient, and that we set the building codes division up for success there, and require them to review the energy efficiency building codes every 3 years, so that we make sure that we stay on track
If that does not happen through the executive order, I will be bringing this bill or something very similar to it in the 2018 session. But with that, I'm going to pull the bill from the schedule today and not ask for either comment or a vote on it today. And with that, I'm closing the work session. Hold the work session over until you get back. Have you seen the cash things? Turns it into a study and report back. Okay. I'll hold it. We'll hold it. Okay. Good. Okay. At this time, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3312. Invite Representative Barnhart to testify. Go right ahead, Representative Barnhart. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11. This bill came out of the realization that there was likely to be some significant changes in the environmental policies of the United States, especially as they come through the Environmental Protection Agency. And I think recent events in Washington, including the appointment of the administrator there, demonstrate that that's highly likely. I will note that Arizona, California, and Vermont also have bills similar to this one that are in the works at this moment. The bill started out as a very simple bill having to do with the Department of Environmental Quality. And as we looked into the bill and looked at the issues that were involved, we realized that there were some significant that was significantly too narrow, because the areas that are in that are dealt with in the United States Code that have to do with the EPA actually encompass a number of departments in the state government. I'll refer you to I'm talking now about the Dash 2 amendment. You can please ignore the original bill. The Dash 2 amendment got quite a bit longer, but I'll refer you to page 2, lines 8 through 14 that describe the different bills or the different Oregon departments that are likely to be involved in dealing with, enforcing, interpreting, managing various aspects of the of the United States Code that relate to these issues. The California law has a long, or the California bill, Senate Bill 49, has a long description, and I refer that you to that rather than reading it, about this topic. So we were trying to figure out, okay, how do we do this? How do we manage this issue in a way that protects Oregon's environment, despite the things that might be happening at the federal level, despite the changes, the potential U-turns that might occur as a result of the change in administration and the change of focus and emphasis at the federal level. Initially, our thought was that we would have these various departments write rules that would protect Oregon's environment from those changes and essentially require that they follow the law as it was in place on January 19, 2017, the day before the inauguration of the current administration. Later, it became obvious that that was too cumbersome, probably impossible to do, and would have a gigantic fiscal. So what this Dash 2 amendment boils down to is a request for these departments to keep track of the changes in the proposed changes or the actual changes in federal environmental law and administrative rules as described in the Federal Registry, and to report back to the legislature in 2018, actually slightly before that, with the following things. First, what those changes proposed changes or real changes or proposed changes are. of statements to whether the Natural Resource Agency, that is one of our agencies, believes that the proposed federal rulemaking, if adopted, would result in federal standards requirements that are less stringent than the baseline federal standards. Baseline is defined on page one, and it basically says what the rules are before the inauguration. And any recommendations that the agency has for implementation of the new federal rules or maintaining of the old federal rules. And I'm looking at subsection B on page 3 of the amendment. And the additional resources that the agency would require in order to make, in order to implement these rules or laws to the next legislature. Now, the federal rulemaking process takes a fair amount of time to do. So it is likely that the significant changes would not be accomplished before the next session of the legislature. And at the same time, this would ask the agencies in Oregon to keep track of the changes that are being proposed or that actually are implemented, so that the next, so that this legislature, in its next session in February, could act if it so, if it chose to do so. We expect the fiscal on this to be significant, but far, far less than asking them to actually write rules. And it gives us an opportunity then to check, to put a check on the changes that are being made at the federal level. And I admit that that is fairly complex, but I think the bill's ready. And I've requested that there that it be referred to Ways and Means for consideration of the fiscal aspects. If there are small changes that need to be made in the Dash 2 amendment in order to meet the goal that we're after, I think Ways and Means is perfectly capable of doing that, especially if it reduces the fiscal. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Representative Brocksmith.
Yeah, section thank you, Representative. Section 2, subsection 2.
Yes.
To the extent authorized by federal law and except as otherwise provided by state law for any federal environmental law, that the Environmental Quality Commission or the Department of Environmental Quality has been delegated authority to administer. Can you tell me by whom is are you delegating? Which programs have been delegated to these natural resource agencies?
Thank you. Thank you for the question, Chair Helm, Representative Rock Smith. That was exactly the kind of issues that, that came up. There are there's a long list of them, and they the I was referring back to Section 3, to the definition of natural resource agencies. And to the fact that not only are we talking about the Department of Environmental Quality, but we're also talking about all about the departments under the definition of natural resource agencies on the next page. That would be Section 3, 1B. And that includes the DEQ, the Department of Agriculture, Department of Energy, Fish and Wildlife, Forestry, Land Conservation and Development, State Parks and Recreation, Water Resources, Oregon Health Authority, and the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. The fact is that the Department of Environmental Quality only manages a fraction of the federal subject matter in Chapter 42 of the U.S. Code. That of the United States regulations, federal. It's called the CFR, and I forget exactly what those things all stand for.
Code of Federal Regulations.
The Code of Federal Regulations. Thank you. This has been something that we've put together fairly quickly. And the result of that is that all these other departments end up being in the list. What we're basically asking them to do is to keep a tally and tell us about it. And then if they think they ought to act, to tell us that. But we're not asking them to actually do anything other than keeping a tally and telling us what their recommendation would be.
I would note that a representative from DEQ is here and signed up to testify, and they might be better able to answer that question.
Maybe that
could, if I could defer till then. I'm going to ask them up next.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions for Representative Barnhart? Thank you for bringing this bill. Any?
Thank you.
Okay. At this time, I'll invite Mike Freese, Heath Curtis, and Marianne Nash. Palmer, why don't you come up, and we'll grab an extra chair, and maybe you can answer that first question for us real quick. Thank you. Welcome. Go, Palmer, maybe you can answer that first that question from Representative Brock Smith before.
Yeah,
Chair we'll go back to the rest of the panel.
Yeah, Chair Helm, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm the legislative advisor for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And Representative Brock Smith, your question about Section 2 of the bill, and this is on the Dash 2 Amendment. The way I read the Dash 2 Amendment, the question about delegated to the Department of Environmental Quality or to the Environmental Quality Commission is actually a delegation from the legislature to the agency or to the commission to implement some part of federal law. And as Representative Barnhart indicated, when you look at EPA's authorities, DEQ does not implement all of those. We implement probably some of the more well-known pieces of that law. So things like the regulation around cleaner air, cleaner water, the management of hazardous substances, and that type of thing. But there are a number of the components of the Code of Federal Regulations that have been delegated by Congress to EPA that the Oregon legislature's choice has been to delegate to other agencies. So I'll give you an example of that. The Safe Drinking Water Act is an act that requires facilities to ensure that the water coming out of their systems are safe for drinking water. In Oregon, the decision has been to delegate that authority to the Oregon Health Authority. So they're the ones who actually go out to the facilities and make sure through testing and permitting that drinking water systems are safe for public consumption of the water. DEQ has a different role under the Safe Drinking Water Act, and where we go and we assess that the watersheds and other sources of water that contribute to those systems are, we help with the assessment around those issues and making sure that the water quality is good. But we don't actually deal with the end of the pipe, as it were, for drinking water systems. So hopefully that helps answer some of your questions.
Thank you.
Very good. Whoever wants to start from the balance of the panel.
It'll be me. So, Chair Helm, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Freese, Vice President of Associated Oregon Industries, here on behalf of AOI and OBA. We are still, I think, struggling some to identify what exactly the impacts of this proposal will be. So, again, I think looking at the Dash 2, which we looked at for the first time this morning, the Dash 2 proposes to require the EQC and the DEQ to revise rules if the federal standards become less stringent. In addition, the state Natural Resource Agencies must report to the legislature the delegated programs that, if changed, may diminish environmental protection, and then make recommendations accordingly. Because, again, the Dash 2 amendments were recently posted, we were trying to identify a few things. One is, as Palmer was just mentioning, which delegated programs and who did the delegation come from? And it's ambiguous in the bill, but it sounds like it could be delegated from this body, the legislature, or it could be a delegated program from a federal agency. And so it's understanding what program specifically are we talking about to better understand if you're asking the business community what the impacts are or what the or how to provide you input. We need some clarity around that particular issue. Also, there are a number of things in the draft amendment that are hard to decipher, including how the agency would interpret stringency. So it identifies, it would require the state, not just on rules, but it would be standards, which standards are different than rules. It could be federal guidance that are not included in the CFRs, but it could be included elsewhere. And so how would the agency then determine what is less stringent or what would be more stringent or equally as stringent if there are any changes made from the baseline? And I think, and lastly, in the essence of time here, we have talked in a number of committees about the burden on DEQ, and as many of you that have participated in the Ways and Means process, you will have heard that the DEQ doesn't have enough resources currently to do what we consider their core programs. Adding this to their plate, an already overburdened plate, we think is completely unnecessary. Nothing in the statutes today bind the legislature's hands from acting on a yearly basis if the Trump administration changes any federal policy in a way that you believe weakens Oregon environmental protection. So we don't think it's necessary. We do think that this creates an undue burden and an unnecessary burden on the agency, and we would ask you to oppose House Bill 3312. Thank you.
Chair Hill, members of the committee, my name is Heath Curtis. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Forest Industries Council and in opposition of House Bill 3312. In truth, I'm learning a little bit here at the podium. My understanding of delegation is very different than Mr. Mason's. For environmental lawyers, it's a term of art, and a program is delegated when EPA delegates it under authority given them from, you know, the U.S. Congress. And so, for instance, Oregon's 402 program under the Clean Water Act has been delegated for administration by the Department of Environmental Quality. That's the delegated body. Not all of the Clean Air Act has been delegated. There have been some recent letters that have delegated the New Source Performance Standards and the NESHAPS regulation. But again, this is a huge body of law. This here, that's Title 40 of the Code of Federal Regulations. That's EPA's CFRs. That's one title, right? That's just Title 40, and there's 37 volumes, and the 37th volume actually has four books you might see there. For me, if I'm anything, I'm a clean water and endangered species attorney, and that covers about three of those books. That is to say, inside of that, there are entire careers built and people started and retired under small subsections of that CFR. The idea here is that we're going to identify which components out of all of that have been delegated to the state, and then we're going to say to the agency that your rules, if you go to amend or revise them, cannot be less stringent than the baseline federal standards. That's hard. That's a lot of work, and that's a lot of pages. The next thing I would say is that with regard to delegated programs, for instance, under the Clean Water Act, right? Under the Clean Water Act, Oregon's 402 program has been delegated. There, the question becomes, well, if it's delegated, what are the federal standards? The water quality standards under a delegated water quality program are set by the state, right? That is to say, and EPA approves or disapproves them, but there's no federal standard against which to contrast them. That is to say, I'm not sure what the agency would be left to do. By contrast, under the Clean Air Program, the standards are largely set by the feds, but the state doesn't change or revise those standards. It has its state implementation plan implementing those standards. To the degree that the standards were changed at the federal level, I suppose that DEQ could adopt its own air quality standards and then try and protect those. But for me, a huge component of that right there are the air quality standards themselves. And I think that were this body to say, go make sure they're at least as stringent as these and no less, what that does is it precludes DEQ from changing rules on standards when in fact EPA may have concluded there is zero risk associated with emissions at that standard and they've decreased it. For me, that's just bad policy. I think that our flyer indicated the handout that we submitted to the legislature said that this makes for pretty decent theater, but we fear that it doesn't make for good policy. And for that reason, we're opposed to the bill. I think that it will require a monumental amount of work. And frankly, given just kind of the disagreement regarding what the language itself means, I think it would prompt significant litigation as well.
Thank you, Chair Hall, members of the committee. Marianne Nash here today on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau, echoing both what Mike and Heath said and wanted to add a couple of thoughts of our own to it. One of the other big questions I have are about differences in jurisdiction between the state and federal programs and how stringency will be interpreted just in light of the fact that some of the state analogs of the programs operate considerably differently. One of them that I'm familiar with is, again, as with Heath and water quality, state and federal jurisdiction differ tremendously. And for example, groundwater might understanding is solely under state jurisdiction. And that's a program that we've seen suffer a lot of loss of state funding for research and for protection. And so to invest a whole lot of money chasing down whether or not we're meeting federal standards when the state has full authority to implement and pursue its own standards and pursue its own programs for those that are solely under its jurisdiction and has lacked the funding to do so, it just seems like a poor use of resources in addition to, as Heath said, a breeding ground for litigation and, quite frankly, a source of considerable confusion, I think, for all those that will be tasked with trying to administer the analysis of stringency. And I think Mike made the point at the end, but I would echo again, you know, there is nothing compelling the state to act right now if the state does see the federal government heading in a direction that it doesn't like. And with a specific policy, at that point, the state can say, come in and ask the question, do we want to create our own state policy? Is there something that we think we need to change in our rules to make sure that we are saying we're being as stringent? In my experience, where the state does have the choice, they are being more stringent than the federal government that's already existing under state law. And so I don't understand why we would need to come in and direct that result in I think, a confusing and challenging way for the agency to administer. And again, I'd say particularly when the state is struggling to adequately fund resources that are solely under its jurisdiction, like groundwater. So again, I think bad policy and just a conversation that we can be having at a later date if and when it's appropriate.
Questions for this panel? Representative Rocksmith.
Thank you.
I forgot. I got ahead of myself. And I know that Palmer was signed up just to testify and not just to answer our questions. We'll answer our questions after he testifies.
Chair Helm, members of the committee, thank you for that. I'm the lone voice in support of the bill, and I wanted to take a couple of minutes to talk about that. DEQ is supporting the bill because we think the federal regulations set a minimum standard, a minimum level of environmental protection, so we're supportive of that. I understand some of the concerns about clarity, and it is important that the legislation be clear, and I heard from Representative Barnhart there will be opportunities to do that when the bill goes on down to Ways and Means if this committee passes it forward. And we're happy to work with Representative Barnhart and anybody else, including the folks here on this panel, to try to clarify the legislation. I would say about the point about delegation, in answering Representative Rocksmith's question, what I was saying is, yes, of course, we have to have a situation where the federal law sets up a mechanism to delegate the operation of federal authority to a state agency. But in addition to that delegation, the Oregon legislature has to delegate authority to that agency to implement that federal program, and that was my point. That's why I think you have to read it both with an eye towards what has been delegated federally as well as what has been delegated by this legislature to a state agency. And we further read the amendment to say to an agency that where you have rules on the books, you can amend or revise those standards to be less stringent than the federal standard, the applicable federal standard. I'll add, too, that I think there is a question about stringency, and that's a fair one. What is meant by being at least as stringent as federal regulations? And working a bit with Representative Barnhart to try to address that question, what we were suggesting, and it may not read totally clearly from the amendment, is the references to the standard and to the requirements and trying to purposely avoid things like policy and objectives and guidance. As the previous speakers have pointed out, and the slide showed, federal law is complicated and there's a lot to it. So I'm not going to say that that attempt to try to be clear that the notion of stringency applied to standards and requirements totally hit the mark, but that's where I think the sponsor was trying to go, and happy to work with others to clarify that. So I'll just leave my comments at that, and thank you.
Representative Brock-Smith.
Thank you. I could be wrong. I guess I'm trying to think about ag and natural resources, and somebody can answer the question, but when I've had testimony from state agencies in front of me before, I've never heard them say they support or oppose a bill. They've always just stayed neutral to give us information on those things. DAQ is the anomaly for me with that, I think. Palmer.
Chair Helm, Representative Brock-Smith. I'm sure we're an anomaly in a lot of ways, but just to be clear, we have testified on bills in support, and most recently on House Bill 2269, which is the air toxics bill. So I hear you, Representative Brock-Smith. It isn't frequent for an agency to testify in either support or opposition to the bill, but it does happen.
Well, I just, because there's, may I follow up?
Yes, follow.
Thank you. Because as it's been testified before, by Representative Barnhart, there's going to be a fiscal to this, and I assume that those dollars are going to go to DEQ to implement the legislation. And so I'm wondering, with the state's $1.6 billion shortfall, and we have no additional dollars to do that, what's DEQ? What programs DEQ is going to be willing to put on the chopping block in order to implement this new program that you're supporting? So what are you not supporting? Because we know that DEQ is having problems implementing its current programs to keep for the safety and welfare of the citizens of Oregon.
Chair Helm, Representative Brock-Smith, certainly the department is asking for additional resources on some of our programs, and we're hopeful the legislature will fund those. On this particular bill, though, I would say the way we're reading the bill is these are cases where federal law allows for the delegation of authority to state agencies. The legislature has delegated that particular authority to DEQ, and DEQ has adopted a standard or a requirement that seeks to set in place that federal standard or set a comparable standard. In those cases, having the agency has looked at that, and actually for us, we believe the fiscal's minimal. We don't see this as going to requiring a whole lot more work for us, because again, we're talking about standards that we have adopted, we have currently on the books, and we don't think very many of those, we think, I should say it this way, we think most of those are at least as stringent as current federal regulations. So there's a reporting requirement that's in the Dash 2 amendment that we'll have to go through, but we believe we can absorb that work through existing resources, particularly since the timeline is pushed out till 2018.
Well, I'm sorry, I know.
Short follow-up.
Thank you.
Move on.
You know, I mean, when we're talking about language such as in Section 3, Subsection 2, Subsection B, that speaks of change of federal regulation in a manner that may diminish the level of environmental protection afforded by the federal environmental law, and then having to go into rulemaking and what diminish means, and then going back to the slide that was, broadcast up here for us to see what all those environmental laws, I hardly can think that the DEQ is going to have the resources that's going to be a minimal fiscal to plow through, as Mr. Heath's testimony so articulately pointed out.
Well, Representative Brock-Smith, I'm happy to talk with you about it more if you'd like to do that. And I agree with you that the word diminish is maybe not the most precise term, and that could be subject to wide interpretation. I will tell you, though, that many of the books that you see there, this large stack of books that was in the PowerPoint, much of that doesn't apply to DEQ. I want to say there's roughly between 20 and 30 discrete bodies of law that are within EPA's purview, and we only implement, you know, I think less than maybe 10 or 12 of those. So there is a body of work with the bill. I don't want to disagree with you on that point. I just think, and we believe, that we can do it within existing resources, since much of our federal or state regulations are as stringent as current federal law.
I was hoping you were going to say diminish my concerns.
Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very short. Palmer, I noticed the front page of the Dash 2 contains a definition of baseline federal standards, means standards, and it says and requirements, and you correctly referred to the word requirements. That would seem to be beyond standards. In fact, one might even wonder if that doesn't include budget items, which you have to spend to enforce. That takes me down to the next part of, I heard people talk about delegated authority, but this extends to both delegated authority and laws that are the analog to federal laws. So it's both delegated and analog, and those that are similar. So that would expand the scope of that which you're supposed to be doing. And then finally, I would just go back to something you said, which was this isn't going to take very much work because we already have stringent standards. And I would ask, why do we need the bill? Because this thing only applies to federal laws that might change. So it seems to me, A, very expensive exercise, B, not necessary. Answer that any way you like.
Chair Helm, Representative Benz, the first question I'll take up as your last point. I think the intent here for the bill is to prevent any backsliding from current environmental standards in Oregon. And given that we feel like most of what the bill contemplates is something that we already have standards for, we read this bill to say DEQ, Environmental Quality Commission, don't take a step backwards. So that's how we read the bill. You make a good point about the fact that this does require us to look at whether there are analog programs or comparable programs to federal law. But again, in having worked with staff, we're not seeing that there's an inordinate amount of work. This bill could probably use some additional clarification. I think that would be fair to say, and we're happy to do that because the term requirements could read much. It's certainly broader than standards. I think when we were reading it, it were things like requirements to have a permit, authorization for certain activities, but the term could be broader than that, and some additional clarification might be warranted.
Thank you.
Thank you, panel, for being here today. We appreciate your testimony. I'm going to recess the public hearing. Actually, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3312, and I intend to get back to a work session on it later on today. I'm now going to open a work session on House Bill 2131 and invite Representative Smith Warner to give us an overview of recent events. Related to this bill.
Yeah, thank you. I was going to say I'm happy to talk about a variety of recent events. colleagues, thank you so much for hearing this bill today. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I have the honor to represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. I have spoken before this committee in various incarnations many times about oil trains, most recently last month with House Bill 2131. And since that time, I have been working with stakeholders, legislative counsel, Senate President, President Peter Courtney from the Senate, Speaker Kotek, staff from the governor's office, federally recognized tribes, relevant agencies, and others to find the best path forward for House Bill 2131 to increase safety measures for the transport of oil by rail. This is a complicated issue. There are many federal laws and restrictions on what states are allowed to do. It is a challenging and ever-changing legal field as cases are litigated and federal rules are challenged. Yet I believe that we need to pass a state law that is as strong as possible. The Dash 2 amendment aligns House Bill 2131 more closely with Senate Bill 7, which was Senator Courtney's bill on the same subject. It also adds in tribal coordination, has funding for both the state fire marshal and DEQ, and adds rail to the existing contingency planning statutes for the transport of oil by pipeline or vessel. This is the strongest possible statutory language I believe that we can do for this issue. Now, again, this is a complicated process, as I mentioned, and the Dash 2 has some issues that I'm well aware of. I've spoken with many of you about them, and we are working hard to resolve them. primarily to ensure that federal preemption issues are addressed. First, there is some concerns with explicit contingency planning approval language and whether a state agency, whether the railroads can have to come under the management of a state agency. So we're working on that language so we're not violating interstate commerce. Second, there's also some redundancies in Section 7 with the information that railroads would need to provide about trainings and coordination. So there are chunks of that we believe can be addressed in other portions of the bill or in rulemaking. So I'm doing extensive revisions to that section. Finally, we are working with Ledge Council on an alternative assessment mechanism rather than Section 14 that is currently in the bill. This is one of the hardest things to do in this state because for good and for ill, we do not have any refineries in this state, and that is the one way that you can easily assess fees on oil transport is when it stops at a refinery. That is the only place you can really, that there is clear law on your ability to assess based on that. So California's fee, which is similar, is currently being litigated. So we're looking for alternative methods that utilize other fees, such as we're working with ODOT and some other rail fees to kind of figure out where we can do this. Well, I appreciate the work that Representative Johnson has done with his Dash 3 amendments. I believe that it is not the strongest language that we can possibly pass. It doesn't include railroads in the statutes that we already have for pipeline and vessel transport of oil. It does lack a funding mechanism, and it has the state fire marshal collect information that I believe DEQ would be better equipped to understand and analyze. So my request is to move this bill with the Dash 2 to rules to allow us for additional time for further work. Mm-hmm. That takes the concerns with the Dash 2. We would be able to take the concerns with the Dash 2, input on the Dash 3 to get the strongest possible policy for our state. And I just want to close up with, of course, the June derailment in Mosier, along with a recent AP article about nationwide track defects and safety concerns, continues to demonstrate how critical it is that we are prepared and have the strongest and can do the strongest law possible. So thank you. So I'll just peter out there.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Smith-Warner?
What are your intents on the things you're using the presentation of either?
Committee, my intention is to move the base bill today. And Representative Smith-Warner and I have talked about this extensively. She believes her Dash 2s are the way to go. Representative Johnson believes the Dash 3s are the way to go. I find myself in the position of Solomon here and thinking maybe that we let both of those options go to be further discussed and everyone lives to fight another day in rules. So that is my intention. The paperwork is ready on the base bill. Representative Johnson has his paperwork ready on the Dash 3s. And if you so desire to make that motion, we'll vote on it.
Could I give some background on the Dash 3s?
Yeah.
Would you rather have that at a different time?
Did you intend on staying, Representative Smith-Warner?
I'm happy. I was going to say, yeah. My biggest conflict was just before this, so I'd be happy to.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and colleagues. Let me just say at the beginning, I don't think there's anybody in the building other than Representative Huffman who may have more of a vested interest in this topic than I, because we represent that part of the Columbia Gorge National Scenic Area that is Exhibit A for the area and the region that we're trying to preserve and to make sure that it continues to exist in its pristine condition. Having said that, I also listened very carefully to what the state fire marshal shared with us back in, I think, February when we had the bill on House Bill 32, had the hearing on House Bill 3225, which was the bill we passed in the previous session that established the Oregon fire marshal as the lead in incident management, and that served us so very well during the Mosier incident, and how the fire marshal's office laid out clearly points that needed to be addressed. They had some gaps, they had some holes that needed to be addressed. Number one, they require that contingency plans and information be filed by rail with the Oregon State Fire Marshal. Our Dash 3 amendments do that. Number two, allow for statewide response planning and execution by the fire marshal, which was noted as a hole to be addressed in the House Bill 3225 report. Number three, allow for a framework for DEQ response planning, as well as soil, air, water, and so forth testing after any incident. That's in that, the dash threes as well. And number four, to include DEQ, Oregon State Fire Marshal, Office of Emergency Management, local responders, and tribal governments in planning, work, and receipt of contingency planning information. So I guess my point would be about the dash threes is that they have been targeted to address holes that we were made aware that we had in our response management plan, but they also are a plan that can be implemented. This afternoon, I received a report from an evaluation from Legislative Council on the base bill and on the dash two amendments, and there are multiple points in here where Legislative Council says that we, the state of Oregon, would have legal issues should we adopt the base bill. Section number 14, the assessment that's in section 14 could be challenged under the Oregon Constitution that requires any tax and a distribution of oil to be deposited in the common school fund. So it's unconstitutional for, via the Oregon Constitution. The Commerce Clause of Article 1 of the state of the United States Constitution prohibits levying taxes on freight traveling through the state. That's in the base bill, Mr. Chair. Challenge of the assessment provision could also be raised under the Railroad Revitalization and Regulatory Reform. So it goes on and on. So I guess I would, my point is, and I don't want to, you know, overemphasize this, but I don't know that I've ever knowingly passed a bill out of a committee that violates Oregon and or federal constitution. And this bill does that. But I say that from the standpoint of someone who loves my district. I am adamant about preserving natural resources, but I want to do it in a way that is legally enforceable and actually builds on the good efforts that we had in House Bill 32 in the last session, 3225 in the last session. So that's where I'm at, Mr. Chair. Appreciate what you're trying to do. My point would be that the base bill is unenforceable and it's unconstitutional. It would land the state of Oregon in severe legal jeopardy.
Any further questions of Representative Smith Warner? Representative, would you like to respond to the dash three?
I would like to briefly respond. As I've mentioned, I think there, I respect the work that Representative Johnson has done. And, you know, I know a lot of the times the answer that you get from LC depends on the questions that you ask. And I have an extensive review of this bill as well that was done, particularly the dash two, after it was heard in this committee. As I've mentioned, there is a clear understanding of particularly Section 14 of taking that out. That I mentioned it in my opening testimony. And indeed, a lot of that language was in the same base bill that we started with 2 years ago, because it's a starting point that we move. We moved it to rules and ended up getting a version of 3225 2 years ago that everybody did come to agreement with. Yet at this point in the process 2 years ago, I would say it was just as contentious with just as many claims and concerns that we would be sued and it would be found unconstitutional as have been made today. And I believe that the best way to continue to move forward is to, because I believe there is still a place that we can get to that is with some version of both of those amendments, that I strongly believe that we need and have an obligation to move it forward and continue the conversation.
Thank you. Further, Representative Rocksmith.
And thank you, Representative. Actually, it's a question for you, Mr. Chair. Well, were you, Representative? I'm not seeing a dash two fiscal.
That's correct. Our paperwork is not back on their desk.
So that was more a girl can ask, but as the chair informed me, the moving with the dash twos is not an option today.
Well, and that's why, because this morning we did move a bill without the necessary paperwork in our economic development and trade, but we have to suspend rules, of course, to do that, right?
Okay. And yet you're correct, Representative Rocksmith, there is that possibility.
No, I just wanted to make sure that wasn't just for economic development and trade. It is for all committees. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. There is a fiscal on that. You did see that, right?
On the dash two.
There's a fiscal on the dash threes.
Yeah, we have. But we have now. Okay. With that, I would entertain. Oh, Representative Bowlby.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more thing. I'm looking for this legal opinion and do not see it that's been discussed in the committee and don't see it online.
It's not on all of it. I can give it to you here if you like.
Yeah. Well,
I got it just prior to committee.
And just, you know, and I appreciate, you know, we get a lot of legal opinions from legislative counsel, and I remember a lot of things can be challenged under the Commerce Clause. Whether they're successful or not, you know, is, I guess, remains to be seen, and people can give their opinions on whether it is or isn't, but I do note that we've passed a lot of legislation that has similar concerns from legislative counsel that things could be challenged by the Interstate Commerce Clause. So, with that.
I'd like a list of those if we could get them.
A long list.
Just for
film and video tax credit.
It goes on and on.
Okay. All right. Seeing no other discussion, I'd entertain a motion on this bill.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 2131 to the floor without recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Power moves House Bill 2131 to the floor without recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I, for the preceding reasons, I'll be voting against the bill, not because I'm not adamantly committed to the topic, but I just believe that the base vehicle is not a good starting point for the discussion in rural, so I'll continue to work on it down there. Thank you.
Further discussion? I would just like to note, Representative Smith-Warner, thank you so much for your hard work, and for those who've been, those who are watching either here or at home, I pushed both Representative Smith-Warner and Representative Johnson very hard behind the scenes to try to reach some consensus. And it's my my thought that we can continue those conversations. I think all parties are very concerned about the safety of our constituents wherever they live with respect to cargoes that are on rail that are potentially dangerous and both to human life and to their environment. In view of the LC opinion that that we just received today, is my thought that passing it forward without a recommendation so that everybody has a chance to digest that LC opinion and understand, get other opinions and understand what it really means would be the best route. So that's where I'm coming from, and I'll be voting in favor of moving this forward. Representative Brocksmith.
I just want to point out that the base bill that we're passing has another DEQ fiscal of over $600,000.
Thank you. Okay. With that, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative Reschke?
Nay.
Representative Bucksmith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Power?
Aye.
Chair Hill?
Aye. The motion passes. And the bill will be sent to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Thank you again,
Representative. Thank you.
At this time, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2020 and ask Representative Holvey to discuss the Dash 2 amendment.
Do you want me to do it from here or down there? Your choice.
Whichever you find most comfortable.
There's a lot of people. I'd just soon not turn my back on. So, you know.
Don't worry, I got you covered.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. For the record, Paul Holvey, State Representative from District 8. House Bill 2020, as you recall, is a bill that renames the State Department of Energy to the Department of Energy and Climate. You will note that the Dash 2 amendments are on OLIS. Those are the ones that we're intending to move forward. The Dash 2 amendment does a few things. It does ensure that there are public hearings, which was maybe an assumption that there were, but there is an opportunity for public comment to the oversight board that oversees the Department of Energy and Climate. And so there's an oversight board. Just want to make sure there's public process in that. Also did a little more work after some feedback on the interagency coordinating committee that is established in this bill as well. Left out a few participants in that, namely the Energy and Climate Director, the Director from the Department of Land and Conservation and Development, the Director of Housing and Community Services, and the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, largely to represent the Building Codes Division. So I wanted to get that on the record. Also did a little more work on what that committee shall do, just responding again to some comments made about the bill. It was never the intent that this climate interagency climate committee would in some way be dictated what policies that the individual agencies had to follow. You'll note that there is a statement that's in this bill that says nothing in this section may be construed to limit the authority of any state agency to carry out state policies, programs, and activities related to energy and climate. Just making sure that the mission of those individual agencies are not being dictated from the Department of Energy and Climate. They still have their own agendas in energy. And then again, did a little bit more work, changed the climate census report to more of a policy and program proposal, just making it clear that we're talking about recommendations on how to better align our climate policies and our energy energy issues, because we have so many overlapping programs within state government. You know, there's dozens of programs, and this bill just will help us do them better and more efficiently. When I think about, you know, just the simple thing of what data are all the different agencies collecting, and how are we reviewing those, and trying to, you know, bring some of those silo activities into a more coordinated discussion so that we can really have data and information that makes sense, that we can analyze. We're comparing apples to apples when looking across different agencies, and, making sure that we're doing things more wisely. And frankly, those other agencies are doing a lot of this climate work within their own agencies, and this will just better coordinate, better align it so it's done more efficiently. And then the group as a whole can, make recommendations to the board and to the legislature as well. So trying to clarify a few of those things in the original bill. And I think that kind of sums up the Dash 2 amendment as the major pieces of what it does do. So I do commend the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2020 and hope that you move it forward.
Committee members, do you have questions for Representative Holvey on the Dash 2 amendment? Representative Brocksmith.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. This bill doesn't have a fiscal. It does say that more complete fiscal analysis will be prepared in rules. I just want to point out that it does affect the Department of Ag, Business Oregon, Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Forestry, Department of Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Department of Transportation, Public Utility Commission and Water Resources Department and Department of Energy. So I can imagine if you add a zero behind each department there, it could start to get a visual picture on what that fiscal would be.
Okay. Representative Power.
I just want to recall that earlier this committee, we did pass on the bill carried by Representative McLean that also was missing some of this paperwork. Understanding that some of these things take time and we are working with tight timelines, sometimes these enable necessary further conversations.
I was hoping for questions for Representative Holvey. My next step will be to entertain a motion and then we'll have discussion. So, questions? Okay, seeing no questions, I'd entertain a motion.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 10th, 2017.
Representative Power moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 10, 2017. Is there any discussion? Representative Pence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that'll be a no on the amendment. And the reason has to do with the language found on page 2. I'm a no on the bill, underline the amendment also, but as everyone who's been around here for several years knows, I've been attempting to bring a climate metrics bill. This takes a wave at it on lines 24 through 30, but just like my efforts, is dramatically inadequate. And and that's because it's really hard to get the correct measure of that which we do in this building when it comes to the climate. This is inadequate, just like my efforts so far, and that's why I haven't brought the bill again, because it takes so much work and we to do it right. And we don't have time left in this session to get it right. And so I don't see any reason to start people out on the wrong foot, as this amendment would do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real briefly, you know, there was a lot of work put into this. We had an oversight committee that lasted for a year, and Representative Bence was on that oversight committee. There was a lot of effort, a lot of time put in for input into this process. And in fact, we asked, you know, for input on addressing some of the things that everybody seemingly agreed that needed to be addressed, like the mission of the Department of Energy, and like trying to move incentive programs to another agency that was more versed in handling those sorts of financial packages. Many of those things we have or are doing through bills in this legislature. And to address the fiscal piece of that, I mean, there was a fiscal statement that said it did need more work, and that's largely because there are going to be savings in some of the actions that we're taking around the Department of Energy. And it's anticipated that this bill won't have a very large fiscal. Many of the programs that are in those other agencies are not being done effectively from or efficiently because they don't have the same measurement of matrix looking at how do we measure our climate programs, how do we measure all these. And this bill, I believe, will ultimately save the state money in the long run. So I do note that, you know, there's a little bit more work to do on the fiscal, but they are looking at it, and they have to weigh it with the other bills that also impact the Department of Energy and others as we redefine this agency. You know, this agency has had a history that we are all aware of the business energy tax credit, which went upside down, but in our review of over a year, it came to light that maybe there was some mismanagement, but there was also a lack of direction, a lack of a way to measure the success of these programs, all of which fall back on the legislature for and not putting proper sideboards on business energy tax credits and some of the other programs. And I will note that there's programs and facilities that have been built all around the state with many of these programs that have been a benefit to Oregon and the economy, despite the fact that some of these programs weren't managed fiscally well. Same could be said with the small energy loan program. We're moving it to Business Oregon. They're better able to manage a portfolio of loans and making sure proper financial risk analysis is done. That was also a recommendation that came out of that oversight committee, though It isn't true that the Oversight Committee started in the summer. It actually started last January when the Speaker and the President of the Senate announced this committee. We started working on it then, and it went clear through December, where we started asking in August for input on how to redraft the Department of Energy. And it wasn't until December that we got any additional input, being myself and my other co-chair, Senator Beyer, on what that would look like. And I do note that there's a couple bills on the Senate side that one Senator Olson has that purports to have four people from that Oversight Committee supporting it. But the committee never came to a conclusion on which pathway to support. This was one of the pathways, albeit this one adds a little extra into abolishing the Global Warming Commission, which wasn't in that first co-chair recommendation report. So I think this is been a lot of work put into this. I think it's a better structure for the future for the Department of Energy, and than we have right now, and see this as a great step forward. So hope to support the bill.
Further discussion, Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Helm. I am new to this discussion, new to this committee also. But I was sort of intrigued by Rep. Bence's comments on climate metrics and the difficulty of establishing those. And I think there are reasons for that. One is that the science of how we understand, how we describe, how we measure climate changes is a constantly changing discussion. We are learning more every day about what's going on with our climate and how we can document that and respond to it. So it's a moving target. And I think the second obstacle that we've had is that we really haven't had anyone assigned within the state bureaucracy to specifically do that work. And with the establishment of this bill, what I see us doing is really developing an intellectual and strategic center for the work around energy and climate. And I think if we once we have personnel who have that as their objective, that we will quickly see what's possible in establishing climate metrics and sort of start to lift the veil on that discussion that's been difficult to take on. So I'm in support of the bill. I think it will move us forward in some very significant ways.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, is there any objection to actually, I'll just have will the clerk call the roll for the Dash 2 amendments, please.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Bence?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative Rushkey?
Nay.
Representative
Brocksmith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Powell?
Aye.
Chair
Hill? Aye. The amendment passes.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 2020 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Power moves House Bill 2020 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion? Representative Bence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A number of observations. First, it shouldn't be going to Rules. It should be going to Ways and Means. The amount of work that this and cost is going to be astounding. In regard to climate metrics, I would suggest no one disputes the need. Many of us dispute the content, and many of us would discuss at length how we would appropriately assign the right folks to get to the proper measurement. The reason I object to the amendment is because it's got the wrong crowd doing the work. The best analysis I've heard is from Palmer Mason. And he and I sat together with Representative Leiniger for a number of different meetings trying to figure out how to put together a proper foundation for climate metrics. Mr. Mason knows what he's talking about, and he properly schooled me on just how complicated it is. If we're going to give this particular effort to a department, it should be DEQ, which has already established a foundation for these kinds of analyses, these difficult and challenged analyses. And also, I would not be putting it with the Department of Energy, which has struggled in the past. Its current administration is doing an excellent job trying to fix a very damaged program. I want the record to be clear that I think Representative Holvey has done huge amounts of work. And the reason that we finally were unable to reach agreement is because he placed climate squarely into a discussion having to do with energy. We did not agree on that. We all disagreed on that except for, I'm going to say, Representative Holvey. And to his credit, he's persisted in his thinking, and here we are today. I would suggest that these issues deserve focus and a real care, particularly when it comes to energy and climate. They're both important. I don't want to combine them and have build back into the department the very conflicts that led to its current unfortunate state. I said this before, Mr. Chair, and I oppose this bill because it's the wrong step forward. There are many good things in it, which I supported in our conversation over the full year. A lot of great discussion and a lot of productive efforts by the department and by my colleagues on that work group. Mr. Chair, I wish it would have come out differently. I will be a no on the bill.
Other discussion? Representative Holvey.
Oh, thank you. I just, for the record, I just wanted to, I appreciate Representative Bentz. He did follow this issue along quite well. There were this House Bill 2020, based off the co-chair recommendation, had the support of Senator Beyer at that time. He sees a few things differently still, but he was a co-author of the Dash One Amendment, the first co-chair report. And we also had the support of former State Representative Jessica Vega Peterson on that, as well as Senator Chris Edwards, who was very adamant about making sure climate was involved in the Department of Energy's mission. The issue around the Department of Environmental Quality, certainly they will always have a piece in measuring the emissions. But there's a lot more to it than just measuring the emissions. There's also the idea that 80% of the greenhouse gas emissions come from energy. And, so if we're going to deal with that, we need to be dealing with the source as well. And there's a lot of programs around energy and the RPS, the Renewable Portfolio Standard, and those goals that play into how we achieve those greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. And so it seems that an agency needs to be doing this. The Department of Environmental Quality is a great agency. They're a regulatory authority, though, that does track energy emissions or emissions in general, and tries to make sure people are complying to the Clean Air Act. And so as a regulatory agency, I'm not sure they're quite the right one to do this kind of planning and policy. And we'll note that many of the analysts at the Department of Energy work directly with Department of Environmental Quality and the PUC, providing them with energy analysis. And it's something we need to do to get our energy portfolio mix correct, and the legislature needs to have that sort of analysis and input and recommendations to make wise decisions going forward. And I fear that we really don't have that kind of energy for the whole state. So I think it's important that we go down this particular pathway as opposed to Department of Environmental Quality. So thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, will the clerk please call the roll?
And Mr. Chair, the motion is.
Did I pass by the motion?
No, it's on
the motion. It means.
Okay, I'm sorry, I missed my spot here. Representative Power has moved that HB 2020, as amended, be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We had our discussion. I got ahead of myself. I apologize.
No, that's fine. I heard there was a motion. I lost track of what it was in the middle of the debate, and I appreciate the restatement.
Okay. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Bentz?
No.
Representative Holvey?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative Rushkey?
Nay.
Representative Brock Smith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Power?
Aye.
Chair Holm?
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Rules. At this time, I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2135. I think I'll describe the bill and the amendment to folks on the committee. 21 for committee members that this has been a while since we heard this bill. It's really been a placeholder as we move forward with the discussions on how the state might respond to climate change. And then, of course, we went into the informational hearings that many of you attended. Since that time, 2135 has sat within our committee with little attention. At this time, I asked for the Dash 1 amendment to be drafted and prepared because it aligns House Bill 2135 with the same principles of Senate Bill 557. And they were not identical bills in the first place. And Senate Bill 557 was able to incorporate some of the better and more recent thinking about how the state might approach climate change. And as we move forward with what I hope will be further informational sessions in the coming weeks, I wanted to have all the ideas in one place so that we could work on them. What this does not mean, if this amendment and this bill is passed and forwarded to rules, is that 2135 is the only way we can do things and that the train has left the station. And I want that to be very clear for folks that are concerned about climate change and what's the best approach from all directions. We're still very much, in my mind, in a conversation mode to understand what the best pieces of climate change response would be. And we have not arrived at that yet through our informational sessions. And I would like additional time to be able to have those discussions, and that's the reason for the amendment and for having House Bill 2135 in work session today. With that, I would entertain a motion on the amendment.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated April 13, 2017.
Representative Power moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment stated April 13, 2017. Is there any discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be a no on the amendment. Then on the bill itself, I just, this committee and this legislature has passed some pretty dramatic carbon reduction legislation in the last couple of sessions. And I think we have shown leadership. I think we've shown stewardship to our environment and just to continue to have this relentless push forward. There's never a finish line, and I think our economy is suffering in some areas. I think that there's a lot of concern about what the future holds, but again, I think Oregon has taken bold leadership, and there are other ways I think that we can help the world with the carbon problem, but I'm not finding them in the bill itself and in the incessant desire to continue to regulate Oregon's economy versus trying to find solutions to help the world fix its problems. So that'll be a no.
Further discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll on the Dash 1 amendments, please?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative Breschke?
Nay.
Representative Brocksmith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Power?
Aye.
Chair Helm?
Aye. The amendment is adopted.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 2135 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Power moves House Bill 2135 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any further discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I must say, having spent a large part of the last 2.5 months working on the low carbon fuel standard, the complexities of which are pretty amazing. I'm reaching a point where at least I can understand the incredible challenge that a piece of legislation like this presents at almost every level, whether it's explaining it to the people of Oregon or whether it's appropriately funding the effort. So I'm happy to see this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, because it would be one expensive piece of legislation. But probably what's more important is that we all understand the nature of what we're about. And I welcome the information meetings that have been held, which I have tried to attend. I would just say that these kinds of major sea-changing types of legislation need enormous amounts of work to get right. And I'm happy to see this is going to get more work. I doubt there's sufficient time left to give it all that it deserves. I do hope we don't end up taking this up next February. That would be extraordinarily unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Because it's just too complicated, too expensive, too dangerous. We've got to get it right if we're going to do it, and that's a big if. I'll be a no now, because I don't think it's deserved. If we were going to do this, we should have spent almost every hearing on it. I mean it, because it's that serious and that impactful to our state. We haven't, and now here we are on the downhill slide toward the end of our session. We shouldn't be bringing it back now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brocksmith.
Well, I don't have much to add after the two comments, other than you know, the cost associated to our citizens, especially the ones in my district with still 6.4% below mean unemployment. And
further comment? Okay. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative
Rushkie?
Nay.
Representative
Brocksmith?
No.
Vice Chair
Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair
Powell?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. And the bill will be sent on as amended to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. At this time, I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2706. And there's a -1 amendment. Committee, this is a water bill that I brought to us, and we had public hearings on. It proposes to impose a fee on water right holders, both private holders and municipalities and districts, to fund better management of water and better management of the data that is associated with how we use water in the state. And as many of you know, I've formed a work group to in part consider this bill along with how we might rationally measure water for the same reasons. The work group's focus has become now on how we approach that measurement issue and how we might. The fee conversation has diminished in popularity and importance in the work group. However, it may still have a role to play in how we might fund some aspect of that work if we are successful. And so what that -1 amendment does is strips out the numbers. So prior version said $100 per water right, $2,500 per municipal right. My intent in stripping out the numbers is to lower the heat on this for all of us and to demonstrate that no particular number is in mind, and hopefully that will send a message out to all of our districts that this is a conversation we're having and it's not a preordained conclusion. So I hope you might feel comfortable adopting the amendment and sending this bill on to revenue, where it can sit while I continue both to revenue and a subsequent to Ways and Means as I finish my work with the work group. Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
I misunderstood my script here. But we can get to that in a minute. The proposal would simply amend the bill and send it down to Ways and Means where it would sit and do the same thing. With that, I would entertain a motion on the bill.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 17th, 2017.
Representative Power moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated April 17, 2017. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Representative Brooksville.
With all due respect, Mr. Chair, as part of the work group, removing the fiscal on the amendment scares me more than the original dollars that were there. So I'll be a no on the amendment.
Representative Reske.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the effort and also the gesture. But the only dollar amount that my district and those that use groundwater for livelihood are going to accept is a zero. So I'll be a no on the amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Will the clerk please call the roll on the Dash 1 amendment?
Aye.
Representative Benson?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative Rushing?
Nay.
Representative
Buxman? No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Howard?
Aye.
Aye. The amendment, Pat, is adopted.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 2706 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation of the subsequent... that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue be rescinded and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Power moves House Bill 2706 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue be rescinded and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any further discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The concept of finding funding for water management is a good one. The challenge is finding the right folks to be paying. And as I mentioned in our previous hearing, what one has to do is look at how water is used in Oregon. I think when I've gone back home and explained to people the nature of our discussions, they've asked me how much, who's using the water, how much, and all the normal questions one should ask. As I pointed out, years ago I asked Water Resources to provide for me the kind of a pie chart showing who was using the water for what purpose. If this bill was reflective of that kind of an approach, as opposed to focusing on just water that is diverted, it would make a lot more sense, and I would be able to support it. But it doesn't. It selects just about 6% of the water being used in Oregon. The other 92-94% stays in stream. It's used by many, many. It's used for power generation. My utility friends probably don't want to hear that they might be asked to actually pay for some of the management for power. But you know what? We give those folks water rights. They use a lot of it. And cities do, too, for lots of a lot of purposes, some better not mentioned here. But the point is, this water cost of management should not be focused on the 6% or 7% of that which is actually diverted. When I talked to the Water Resources Department about this issue and asked what their regulatory efforts were, I was told, not surprisingly, that much of what they do today is to protect the in-stream interests. And yet we will be charging out-of-stream users for that work. What's that about? And what are those in-stream interests? Flat water use, power generation use, municipal use. All types of uses are left out, and we are loading up on those who have the good fortune, I might add, to have a water right. So I applaud your efforts. I can't support this bill because it is too narrowly crafted. Believe it or not, when I've asked people at home if they would pay 6% of a fee, they've said yes. And that's exactly the amount of the water that agriculture probably is using when because it's a usufructuary right, as we all know, which is the case for everybody using water. It needs to be broader in scope. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Benz, let me just say that I remember your comments from our previous discussion and today. They're not going unnoticed.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Okay. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Benz? No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Rushkie? Nay.
Representative
Brocksmith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Power?
Aye.
Chair Helm?
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill will be sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
This time I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3241. And there's a dash 2 amendment. Beth, can you remind us of the contents of this bill?
Chair Helm, committee members, House Bill 3241, you heard originally on the 11th of April. The dash 2 amendment that you have in front of you replaces the measure with the exception of the removal of certain statutory references that were cleaned up. It also authorizes local government to establish programs to assist owners of single-family dwellings in financing cost-effective seismic rehabilitation or utility improvements. There's a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact issued on the measure.
And I would entertain a motion on this amendment.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated April 10th, 2017.
Representative Power moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated April 10, 2017. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Actually, I'll hand it over to Representative Marsh to explain the amendment to the committee.
Well, as noted, the amendment basically replaces the bill, and what we are doing within the amendment is to empower local governments to implement a loan program to community members that is targeted at energy improvements and seismic improvements. And then the bill goes on to note a number of consumer protections that are built into the bill, as well as some guidelines regarding the actual administration of the program within those communities. We have had some questions. Shall I go ahead and address those questions? The bankers raised questions over the weekend regarding the fact that the bill does not require participants to obtain approval from their mortgage holder and to participate. And I appreciate the opportunity to respond to that. I would note that this is standard operating procedure for PACE residential programs everywhere else in the country, including in the states of California, Florida, and Connecticut, where it is most active. We've had around 100,000 residential PACE applicants approved in those states. This is also consistent with best practices for PACE programs that were noted by the Department of Energy in November 2016. I do have the document here if anybody wants to look at it. So really, we followed the best practices laid out by Department of Energy. Secondly, I would note that we have included parameters in the legislation to limit the loan obligation and hopefully to soothe any concerns from mortgage holders. First, we've included language to ensure that the cost of improvements do not exceed the cumulative cost savings, with the exception for seismic upgrades, which obviously aren't going to adapt to that same kind of measurements, as well as some other very limited improvements. There is significant evidence in the literature that PACE improvements actually accelerate property values. So if there is concern from mortgage holders, I would refer them to a document put together by the Journal of Structured Finance, which was a study of PACE loans and whether sale value reflects improvements. They conclude, and I'll just read a sentence to you here. The resale price of the PACE properties was slightly higher for PACE homes than others. Exhibit 6 in this document shows that the gain on the PACE homes is, in this case, $5,000 more than the gain on the non-PACE homes. The difference is statistically significant. So we believe that there's plenty of evidence that this is actually an improvement to the property that should be welcomed by mortgage holders. Secondly, I would note that we have limited loans to 20% of market value. This is not about a homeowner getting a second to go on a trip to Paris. This is really about making very specific, targeted improvements in a home. And thirdly, I would note that there is flexibility within the bill to allow local jurisdictions to follow both the Department of Energy best practices and guidelines that have been issued by the FHA. The FHA stipulates the property can be subject to a superior PACE lien for the delinquent, regularly scheduled PACE payments. However, it cannot be subject to the superior lien for the full PACE obligation. We believe that there's plenty of flexibility here to allow local programs to respond to this via a simple statute that ensures that the loan cannot accelerate. We are also open over time to adding this language to the legislation as it progresses.
Good. Any discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I wonder if the bankers would like to quickly explain their concern, or do you feel that the input we have on the record is adequate?
I do. Okay. I appreciate the input, I assume that there will be further discussions, and I also appreciate the research that Representative Marsh has brought to us. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been supportive of PACE programs in the past when they didn't include this unfortunate upsetting of our lending programs. I don't know if I've ever seen any other situation where we would take something that was of this nature and push back those who have already taken on the risk of financing a home. This would be an unfortunate first step in shoving aside our community that's out there trying to help our affordable housing crisis. Why would we want to make housing even less attractive in our neighborhoods by putting at risk those who choose to loan money for houses in this fashion? It makes no sense when we have an affordable housing challenge already before us. I hate to be so graphic, but having spent years, literally, of my life working within this venue, I know exactly how bankers and other lenders think, and they will not like this. This will not be good for Oregon when it comes to financing housing. I'll be a no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you. Representative Marsh, so can you help me understand, you know, I think the core root of my concern and what I think also Representative Benz has spoken about is really the reference to ORS 223.230 on page 5, top. When we're talking about, and I'll just read it, basically subsection A, secure a loan or financing with the lien of the benefit of a single-family dwelling with the same priority as determined under ORS 223-230 sub 3 as a lien for assessments or local improvements arising under ORS 223-393. But the problem with ORS 223.230 sub 3 is that it is defined. And so I can understand where other states, you said, allow this and it's being used because the concept is good. You know, we've spoken about that. But other states might not have this statute because it says all unpaid final assessments together with accrued and unpaid interest and penalties, and this is ORS 230 sub 3, penalties are a lien on each lot or parcel of land or other property, respectively, in favor of the local government, and the lien shall have priority over all other liens and encumbrances whatsoever, is the concern.
That the lien is in first place. Right. And that's that is part of the concern of the mortgage holders. I can tell you that in the experience of other states, it's not been practical to try to get a mortgage holder to approve this. We also want to hold that lien in first place because it's a little bit more security for the public dollars that are going into the program. However, FHA, after many years of dealing and grappling with these programs, has essentially, with some parameters, approved the way that PACE liens are outlined. And I noted that in the comments that I provided at the top of this discussion, noting, and I can pull those notes out again, that the lien, as long as let me get the exact language here. As long as the loan is not accelerated so that the mortgage holder cannot be second to the full cost of the loan, that the FHA is okay with that. So in other words, the property can be subject to the superior PACE lien for the delinquent regularly scheduled PACE payments, okay? So as long as we don't accelerate the loan, then the mortgage, the lien, the full cost of the entire loan is never superior to the mortgage. Does that make sense?
It does, and thank you for the clarification.
Any further discussion about the Dash 2 amendment? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll on the Dash 2 amendment, please?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative
Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative
Reschke? Nay.
Representative Brocksmith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Power?
Aye.
Chair Nelson?
Aye. The amendment is adopted.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 3241 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Power moves House Bill 3241 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Benz? No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative
Reschke?
Nay.
Representative
Brocksmith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Power?
Aye.
Chair Holm?
Aye. The motion passes. And Representative Marsh, would you like to carry your bill?
Sure.
Okay. At this time, I'm opening and letting Beth catch up.
Thank you.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3269. And Beth, would you let us remind us of this bill, which we heard a couple weeks ago?
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3269 has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means for the record. It changes the name of the Oregon Global Warming Commission to the Oregon Climate Change Commission and requires the commission to appoint an executive director. The act also appropriates an undetermined amount of money from the general fund to the commission for purposes related to the executive director. There's no revenue impact, a fiscal impact issued on the measure.
I would entertain a motion on this bill.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 3269 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Power moves House Bill 3269 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I'll be a no on the bill. Again, it's expansion of the mission of this group, actually creating a bit of an agency status. There'll be a fiscal attached to this. I just don't know where we're going to get the resources to continue to add on these regulatory agencies. So I will be a no.
Any further discussion? I'll just note this bill is an attempt to acknowledge the work that the Global Warming Commission has done thus far on almost no budget. Angus Duncan and Jessica Shipley have endeavored to put out the Global Warming Commission's report year after year with a very small portion of an FTE. This would remedy that. If House Bill 2020 is successful, this bill will not be needed. For those purposes, it's my hope that we will move it on along with House Bill 2020 to rules for further work. With that, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative
Rushkin? Nay.
Representative Brocksmith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes and the bill will be sent to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. At this time, committee, I'm going to go back and did we have just a public hearing? I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3312, following up on the public hearing that we had at the beginning of our meeting today. And we're almost done, by the way.
Mr. Chair, committee members, just a reminder, there's a Dash 2 amendment and there's a revenue impact and fiscal statement issued on the bill. And House Bill 3312 would require the Department of Environmental Quality to adopt standards set by the EPA. The Dash 2 amendment replaces that measure and makes the changes that we discussed earlier.
I would entertain a motion on this bill.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 3312 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Please excuse me. I did a wrong script.
I'm going to recess the work session on this bill. A work session on House Bill 3312. Just previously, we needed to amend the script for this bill to reflect that there is an amendment, which you heard earlier during the public hearing. And so I'll ask Representative Power to restate the motion.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment stated April 17th, 2017.
Representative Power moves... moves House Bill 3312 to the floor. Representative Power moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated 4/17/17. Is there discussion?
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to recap the discussion we had prior, but I do think it's a rushed effort. I don't think it's a needed effort, and I'll be a no.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Brocksmith.
I just want to echo Representative Johnson's comments, but also, is this, I'm not seeing a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on the agenda here. So
there is one, however, we just haven't gotten there yet.
Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply wanted to make a couple of comments about the testimony that we received on the bill. I very much appreciate the support of the Department of Environmental Quality. I think that's important, and I think it demonstrates that we actually have drafted a bill that is going to work. AOI suggested that they're struggling with what the impact is. So am I. That's the point of the bill, is that we don't know what the impact is, and we want to make sure that we keep up that we keep ahead of what the impacts might be of the change in the federal administration. Additional comments were essentially that this was going to add things to the plate of the various agencies, and of course that's the point of the referral to Ways and Means, because they're the ones who will make the determination as to whether resources are available to do this or not. I think we've heard the testimony of one of the departments that the impact is going to be minimal, but in any case, my view is that this committee's job is to decide whether it's a useful policy, and Ways and Means gets to figure out whether we can afford it or not.
Any further discussion? Will the clerk please call the roll on the Dash 2 amendment?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Benz? No.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative
Marsh?
Aye.
Representative
Gleski?
Nay.
Representative
Brosnan?
No.
Vice Chair Power?
Aye.
Chair
Helm? Aye. The amendment is adopted.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 3312 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Power moves House Bill 3312 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? As amended. I'm going to repeat that because, just to be clear, Representative Power moves House Bill 3312 to the floor with a due pass, as amended, with a do-pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'm sorry if I interrupted any discussion. Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Bernhardt?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative Rushkey?
Nay.
Representative Brock-Smith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair College?
Aye.
Chair Hall?
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill will be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. At this time, I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2133. And I'll ask, Beth, can you remind us of this bill?
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2133, just for the record, it amends the 8% community-based renewable energy requirement by capping at 20 average megawatts of electricity per calendar year the amount of energy that can be used from a single biomass facility to meet the scale, small-scale renewable energy goals. There's a dash 2 amendment that specifies that regardless of the facility's nameplate capacity, it may be used to comply with the requirement for only up to the 20 megawatts of capacity. There's a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact issued on the dash 2 amendment.
I'd entertain a motion on the dash 2 amendment.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the dash 2 amendment dated February 8th, 2017.
Representative Power moves to adopt the dash 2 amendment dated February 8th, 2017. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the amendment? The amendment is adopted.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 2133 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Power moves House Bill 2133 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an important piece of cleanup work from Senate Bill 1547 in the last session. It's important to our biomass producers and to all of our renewable energy industry in Oregon, so I'll be a yes. Yay.
Might not be the only one today.
Let the record show.
Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Remaining consistent with my position all day long, I'll be a no, but let me explain why. It took me a while to remember what this bill was doing, and for that I apologize to my colleagues. But going back and looking at the bill, 4698.210 was originally designed to support community-based renewable energy projects. And it had two subparts. In order to comply with this, the idea was first you'd have small-scale renewable projects of 20 megawatts or less, and then secondly you could have electricity using biomass that also generated thermal energy for secondary purposes. There's some confusion easily generated by virtue of this bill when it comes to the RPS, which I'll skip over, and instead simply say that the new Dash 3 allows very large biomass facilities to qualify for this particular section, which was not consistent with the original community-based renewable energy project concept. There's another bill in the Senate that I think better addresses what really should happen under the original concept here, which was to help community-based energy projects, not massive projects that might be burning biomass for a day or two. And so I'll be a no. I'm hopeful that the Senate bill will ultimately emerge with a more clarification as to this situation, because it is extraordinarily confusing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brocksmith.
And we, as you know, Mr. Chair, we've worked on trying to get some amendments to analyze that. My understanding is if this bill passes, the Senate bill will stay where it's at. I just want to appreciate the work that has been done in that area, so that Representative Benz is correct, where this is supposed to be geared to more community-based renewables rather than larger scale.
Thank you for those comments. Any further discussion on the Dash 2 amendment? Is there any objection to the Dash 2 amendment?
I think we already did that.
I'm sorry.
This
motion. Okay. I'll just have the clerk call the roll. Sorry.
Now, excuse me, Mr. Chair. Now I'm confused.
Okay.
I think the vote's on moving the bill to the floor. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Let me repeat where we're at. I'm sorry to be confusing. Representative Power has moved that House Bill 2133, as amended, go to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
That's what we just had discussion on, and I'll now ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Vince?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative Rushkie?
Nay.
Representative Brocksmith?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pollard?
Aye.
Chair Hall?
Aye. The motion passes, and Representative Brocksmith, will you carry this on the floor?
He just voted
oh,
no.
I'm sorry.
I just voted no.
Representative Johnson, would you be willing to carry it on the floor?
I can, thank you.
Thank you, though, Mr. Chair.
you seem to, of us, have some of the best knowledge on the bill. Okay. And that leads us to the last bill of the day. I'm now opening a work session on House Bill 3386. And I think instead of having Beth re-describe this bill, I'll ask Representative Bentz, would you like to describe the bill and the Dash 6 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity. The original bill was a placeholder as replaced in full by the Dash 6. The Dash 6 is now in the process of being dramatically reworked, and it's likely it will not be recognizable when it emerges. For example, the Dash 6 contains a credit window that will be replaced with the format now be utilized in California. There are 8 or 10 other elements of the bill that are currently being drafted and are in draft form. But because of the press of work in the last couple of days, LC was not able to complete it, and it's certainly not their fault. My hope is that we will move the Dash 6 and then move the bill to the floor with a referral to rules where we will continue the effort and replace the Dash 6 with the amendment that LC is currently working upon, which, by the way, Mr. Chair, I think will be met with a much greater level of enthusiasm than was the case for the Dash 6.
And Representative Bentz, it's my understanding that the Dash 6 aligns with the fabulous PowerPoint presentation that you showed us during the public hearing.
It does indeed.
Okay. With that, I'd entertain a motion on the Dash 6 amendments.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated March 31st, 2017.
Representative Power moves to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated March 31, 2017. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the Dash 6 amendments? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 3386 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Power moves House Bill 3386 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Though this amendment we're voting on isn't something that I can totally agree to at this point. I'm happy that there's more work going on. Happy to give this a courtesy vote to keep it moving, to have that discussion like we have a few other bills here, and hopefully can support it in the future.
Any further discussion? Representative Powell.
I'd just like to echo Representative Holby's comments as well.
Further discussion? Will clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Vince? Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Marsh?
Aye.
Representative
Rushkie? Aye.
Representative Brocksmith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Power?
Aye.
Chair Helm?
Aye. And the motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Rules. Just going to take a breath here. Well done. With that, committee, I'd like to thank everybody today for your patience and your demeanor. I know that sometimes we philosophically differ about some of the bills that come before us, and I appreciate your efforts. Thank you. The House Committee on
Energy Environment is adjourned.
Remember, Wednesday's meeting is canceled.
Is adjourned.
Remember, Wednesday's meeting is canceled.
Energy Environment